King T. Leatherberry is a horse racing legend, but not in the manner of a Bob Baffert or a Wayne Lucas. Leatherberry has been grinding it out since 1958, primarily with claiming horses. But the 85-year-old trainer has been so good at what he does that he's the fifth winningest trainer of all time in North America, and he is in the Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Leatherberry, who may be nearing retirement, we'll find out, is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
Why do TaylorMade horses sell for nearly double the market average? A history of success, honesty, and hard work. For over 40 years, buyers and sellers alike have trusted TaylorMade as the industry's top source for high-quality thoroughbreds and friendly service. While sellers get top dollar for their horses, buyers are rewarded for top results on the track. From sale toppers to Grade 1 winners to Breeders' Cup champions, think TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing.
Welcome back. This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN's podcast, and it's our pleasure to have as our guest today King Leatherberry, the legendary Maryland trainer who won his first race at Sunshine Park, now known as Tampa Bay Downs in Florida, in 1958. King, according to a recent Racing Form article, you're down to two horses. You're going to give both the winner off and take some time off for yourself. We see that. We also seen that Laurel has announced that it has named a stakes race in your honor. That's obviously something I'm sure you're thrilled about, but it has people asking questions. What is your future? What about retirement?
Yeah, well, that's it. I thought I start off by saying, who says I'm retiring? Which leads me into a joke about the doctor telling the guy that he's in good shape and 50 year old. And the guy said, who says I'm 50? He said, I'm 60. He said, well, you are in good shape. How old was your father when he died? He said, who said he did? He said, he's 82 and doing well. He said, good heavens. He said, well, how old was your grandfather when he died? He said, who said he died? He's 102 years old. In fact, he's getting married tomorrow. And then the guy said, good gosh, why would a man 102 years old want to get married? He said, who says he wants to?
I hear you. That's a great story. So,
no, I haven't announced that. The thing is, the rumors are going around because I'm dwindling down on horses.
Right.
And as you said, I was down to five, and then I was down to three, and then two. And then they just sent those a couple of days ago back to the farm, which we'll pick up later, the two-year-olds. Mm-hmm. The owner wanted to give them a break. And so that's it. So I'm a horse trainer with no horses to train. So right now, we're just waiting. In February, in the middle of February, we'll pick up our turf horses. We do have some turf horses on the farm.
How many of those do you have?
We have five, actually six. So we'll be picking those up now. So we had, it's a terrible year this past year in Maryland. We had more rain in the state of Maryland ever had since they started recording rainfall. And it's killed the turf. I mean, mm-hmm. we only could run about half the time on the turf. And so all my horses that were turf horses just sat there and waited for a race to come up and have it rained off the turf. Mm-hmm. So basically, that it killed us last year. I thought I'd have a good year because of had nine actually turf horses with conditions, and we did lose a couple of them. But like I say, I'm going to swing back again, but with a very small stable.
Okay. And King, like most horse trainers, I'm just guessing you probably haven't had many days off over the last 60 years, perhaps none. What do you think about the downtime? How are you going to fill your day? What are you looking forward to it? Are you not looking forward to it?
No, I'm not particularly looking forward to it, but I'll just, you know, do what comes up. I can just work around the house, and certainly I'll continue to go to the races many days. And I do enjoy that. It's got me into the game. Mm-hmm. So, I'll enjoy going to the races and watching other people's horses run. And then I'll catch up with some work around the house.
Okay. Now, King, I obviously, and you've pretty much said this, we're not going to see the day where you have 50, 60 horses again. But are you hopeful that you can resume your career in 2019, you know, with a decent, good stable of 15 horses and where you might win 20 races a year? Is that something you still think is
No, I can't do that. It's not realistic at all. I mean,
okay.
I'll be 86 then, People getting into the game. All my old owners, original owners, I don't call them old, but they're gone. They either just quit the game or they died. And so I'm not expecting a young person getting into the game to pick an old trainer like me. They would be better served if they had a younger guy, up and coming, good mm-hmm. trainer mm-hmm. that they could grow with.
Right. Now, Nick King, it's not just you. A lot of trainers, a lot of fellow members of the Hall of Fame have had the same sort of problem. At some point in their career, usually around their mid-70s or something, people just seem to lose confidence in them. Is this just a horse racing problem? Is it a societal problem? Why do you think people are so easy to give up on the King Leatherberries or the Ron McAnally's of the world? There's another guy who's a great horse trainer and probably just like you. He probably only has 8-9 horses or something like that.
Well, no, it's natural thing. It's one thing. It's just like any sports teams. Look at the football and basketball coaches, and you know, if they don't win, then you're looking to. I live right outside. I only live about half, 2 miles, I guess, from the Redskins Stadium, and they've had a really bad year, and somebody's got to go. I mean, I don't know if it'll be the coach. But usually that's what it is. And people got to make a change mm-hmm. when they're not winning. Mm-hmm. And you do hit slumps. When I didn't hit the slump was when I had a lot of claiming trainers, owners rather, and I had a lot of claiming horses. And so with those, as they go, you replace them, easy to replace. And so you can continue your higher rate of winning mm-hmm. than you can with the homebreds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you believe you're as good a trainer as you were 30 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know. I did some remarkable things as a younger trainer. I don't know how I did them. I look back at some old pictures and gosh, and the horses were winning. And 1 year I went 365 races in 1 year. And it's just, I don't know how it happened. I marvel at it myself. I always rode good riders. I did have a knack for spotting the Hall of Fame riders. Mm-hmm. Like I was Chris McCarron. I spotted him off of his first race he rode, and went on and win many races with him, including his first stakes race ever. Same way with Kent Zermo, he won his first stakes race ever on, and both of them still had their 5-pound apprentice, which of course doesn't count as in a stake race, but they were riding so well that they didn't need it.
Mm-hmm. And King, should everything go well so far as you stay healthy, you get a chance to rebuild your stable a little bit, get some more horses to train, how much longer do you see yourself continuing? Are you just going to keep going until...
It's almost like a horse. A horse, age doesn't usually stop a horse. It's their problems they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll have physical problems. They just wear out. They have an old ankle joint that you use so much that it starts to wear down. And then it affects their ability to run. So I've been very lucky because all the trainers that I started out with that I can think of all are gone. And my major competitors back in the days when I was really rolling, and they are all gone. They died. And so that's what happens.
Well, we'll talk about those trainers, the great ones like Buddy Delp and John Tamaro and Dick Dutrow, who made up the Big Four in Maryland. But first, we're going to take a break and this message from our friends at TaylorMade.
For over 40 years, buyers, sellers, and breeders alike have turned to TaylorMade for custom fit solutions. From boarding to breeding to both public and private sales, our dedicated team stands ready to serve you. With expert advice from the Taylor brothers and their experienced team of account managers, you can count on TaylorMade to provide the personalized service you deserve and expect. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing can do for you.
Ben's cat, saving all the ground, is trying to charge from fourth of the furlong, left to go, 44 second half mile. Rocket Heat is the leader. Rocket Heat up top, spring to the sky. Ben's cat surging late. Can Ben's cat get there? Here comes the cat. The cat surges through. Oh, 2016 is the year of the cat. He's 10. He's better than ever. And it's Ben's cat in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint.
King, you just heard Ben's cat winning the 2016 Jim McKay Turf Sprint at age 10. This might be hard to put into words, but you owned, bred, and trained this horse. What did he mean to your life and to your career?
Oh, my golly. He's the one pushed me into the Hall of Fame because he was competing on the high level, which means a lot to the Hall of Fame people that vote. You win cheap races, they don't count much. But the good ones bring recognition to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, he started his career in 2010, ran 63 times, won 32 races, 26 of them stakes races. He earned $2.6 million. He won the Jim McKay Turf Sprint 5 times. King, in an era where horses have become soft and aren't durable like they were in the glory days of the 60s, when you were winning those 350 races a year, did you ever think you'd see another horse like this, that some horse like this could even come around and do what he did?
No, it's just luck. It's just luck and percentages. You know, the more horses you deal with, better chance you got to come up with something. Mm-hmm. But they come up in one chance and whatever. And if you do something that many times, then you got a chance to hit something like that.
Okay. Well, when you say luck, obviously the breeding doesn't suggest that this horse was going to go on to do what he did. He's by a sire by the name of Parker Stormcat out of a 38 paces mare. And when you plan a mating for a horse like this and breed to a small sire to a mare that didn't accomplish much on the racetrack, what were you expecting? What do you hope for? Or is it just a guessing game?
Yeah, no, you try to use some laws of probability on different things, and you know something's going to hit here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you don't. That you can't just plan out something that comes along. You can plan it, but it's very seldom going to work out the way you think.
So, when it comes to this particular horse, what makes him stand apart from the others? California Chrome would be another example of a horse who succeeded at an even higher level with breeding that was nondescript. Is it something special about the heart of the horse, their desire, their will to win? Or again, is it just the luck of the racing gods?
Yeah, well, I bring this old saying years ago. They had a saying, horses come in all shapes and sizes, only some run faster than others. But no, and some horses are better physically made and do have a heart. And he was extremely intelligent horse, Ben's cat was. Another thing that helped him, he was a turf horse. So that meant he got every winter off. So he got a break as he comes, every year he got a break, where the other horses seemed to work all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, the story of Ben's cat doesn't end well. Just 24 days after his last race, he's retired, sent to what is going to be a great home, and he passes away from colic. Again, I don't know how you put something like that into words, but that must have been just heartbreaking for you.
Oh, it was devastating. It was really sad. And there, I just think he made it all through those years racing and stayed sound and everything. And then he comes out. It was a tragic ending for a remarkable horse.
King, obviously Ben's cat was the best horse that you ever trained. But besides him, what accomplishments are you most proud of during your career, be it a single victory, be it overall excellence? What are you most proud of?
No, just winning races.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Winning races is the thing. It keeps you in business.
Okay,
and best advertisement in the world is you win a race.
Okay. You've certainly won a lot of them. Well, we'll continue to take a trip down memory lane with King Leatherberry when we return. But first, this message from our friends at TaylorMade.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won.
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack, and they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
King, I don't know if you chose to be a claiming trainer or if it just that's the way things wound up.
Yeah, I know I chose. I started out with my father's horses, so he bred his own horses. And so then you got horses any way you could.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Whatever came up. You get somebody that was impressed with you and they started to have a couple horses.
But no aspirations to have Kentucky Derby type horses, grade one horses
well,
in
no,
your barn?
Well, no, because that was too far-fetched.
Okay. Now, we've already mentioned the competition that you faced in Maryland, and it was legendary. The four claiming trainers that dominated were yourself. Dutro Delp, and John Tamaro. What was it like?
Well, Bud Delp started the thing.
Okay.
Bud Delp started. He started as just getting what we call a supermarket stable, and he claimed a lot of horses. As soon as he lost one, he'd claim another one. And so that was a guy that we kind of copied off of. And I figured if I'm going to compete against him, I'm going to have to do similar things. So that's what got us into claiming.
Okay.
And then it was the competition between the four was so intense that I think it benefited all of us from the competition.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of personal or professional relationship did you have with the three others?
It was really serious stuff. I mean, it was serious competition, but we respected each other,
mm-hmm.
and so we fought hard.
Okay. Now, King, another thing was that you were an early user of the sheets. And how much did you use them when making claiming decisions? And did they give you an advantage?
Yeah, well, it started out, Raguson himself, Len Raguson, who originated the sheets, he called me and told me, he said, look, you don't know me. He said, I like your record. When you get a horse, it usually improves. I'm going to call you up to claim some horses. And he called me and I claimed it. I ran the horse back and it won. I claimed another horse. He ran the horse back and it won. The three straight times they won. And I'm saying, Jesus, this guy's a genius. So whatever he's doing, it was pretty good. So anyhow, that's the way I got to know those sheep people. And then I started believing in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went public. Because at first they weren't, you couldn't buy them. You had to be kind of a member of their gang.
Mm-hmm.
So then it went public with them and you could buy the sheets. So I've been using sheets to, it helps you evaluate the value of the horse and the ability of the horse.
Okay. King, in all the years you've been training, how is the sport better today and how is it worse today?
You know, you got to change with the times. It's better in that you have high purses now and the facilities are certainly better. And I used to train at little half-mile tracks. In Maryland, we had four half-mile tracks. And that's all they were, it's a half-mile. Then some of them increased to 5/8.
Mm-hmm.
And So that was the cheapest of all horses. And then that's all gone. Mm-hmm. Cheap tracks are kind of gone out of business,
okay,
basically.
Okay. Do you miss the days, though, when there were 20,000 people in the stands on a Saturday afternoon?
Well, no, it's not that. It's the people betting. The handle is what makes the game. And so now they don't have to be sitting in front of the stands. They can be home watching it on television and on computer and all that.
Okay.
So that's the main thing is that the more people bet, the more it comes into the game.
Okay. King, when it's all said and done, how do you want to be remembered by this sport?
Just by winning races, winning a lot of races.
Okay. And I hope you have a lot more winners left in you. Do you think you do?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, King Leatherberry, very much. Thanks to TaylorMade for sponsoring the TDN podcast.